2-2 count. Beauchesne looking for one more home run in front of the home crowd. At the very least, wants to get on base one more time. 1-2 the count here in the bottom of the eighth. 10-4 lead for the Dock Spiders, and Beauchesne fouls it back. So still a 1-2 count. Beauchesne fighting up at the plate. On the season, Beauchesne had entered this game batting .311, a second half player, but man, he has been huge for the Rafters. I was looking at it earlier, some of the Rafters season-long leaderboards, and Beauchesne fifth on hits as he swings and fouls one back, and that hits off of Chambeau, and he goes tumbling to the ground. So Chambeau taking some time here, but looks like he's all good to go. Back on his feet now, and with that, a little bit of time here, and Chambeau ready to go, but Ament walking back towards second base and talking with his infielders. Home plate umpire getting some new baseballs, and now steps back behind the catcher, Chambeau. 1-2 the count. Sixth pitch of the plate appearance coming up here as the moon shines on from right center field, high above the outfield light pole. 1-2 the count. Gaz still on first. Ament looking to take care of Beauchesne. Long wait, now fires. It's an outside swing and a miss for strike number three, and that takes care of Jake Beauchesne for out number one in the eighth inning. Brings up Peyton Bryant to the plate with one out and a man on first in the bottom of the eighth. Still a 10-4 Dock Spiders lead, and the Dock Spiders out hitting the Rafters 13-3 tonight. The Rafters offense has been shut down by the Dock Spiders as the first pitch is swung on and fouled back. Owen won the count. Not a single earned run has come across this game. All four of the runs have been unearned for the Rafters due to a couple of errors for the Dock Spiders defense. 0-1 count misses low, now a 1-1 count. And Bryant, 0-1 on the game, reached on a hit-by-pitch his last time up and drew a walk the previous plate appearance, but he struck out swinging back in the second. 1-1 the count with Landon Gaz over on first base. And the pitch from Ament swung on and fouled back, so Bryant fights that one off, although a pitch that likely could have been taken for ball two. And Bryant continues to work up his on-base percentage. Been his calling card for the Rafters this season. Bryant, one of the catchers for the Rafters who came in just recently from South Georgia State. He laces one out towards left center field, and that gets over the head of the infield. And the center fielder running up on it will bring it in and keep Gaz on second. But the fourth hit of the game for the Rafters comes in the eighth inning, as that's Peyton Bryant's first hit of the game. And man, Bryant has continued to look good for the Rafters. What a find for them, as he was working back from an injury that kept him out most of the summer. But a guy that was on Manny Silva's radar ever since coming up here from Georgia. Both of them coming from that area, and Silva had had contact with Bryant, and after the spot opened itself up, made the call, came up here ready to get the experience, and man oh man has he shined. Now at the plate, Lachlan Maud, the right-handed hitter who swings and misses at the first pitch for strike number one. 0-1 the count, and Maud, righty catcher, it's a righty-lefty matchup between him and Ament. Runners on first and second with one away in the bottom of the seventh. A 10-4 Dock Spiders lead. Won the count coming home, and it's a swing and a miss for strike number two. 0-2 the count, and Maud had a chance to tie the game up in the fourth inning, but he struck out swinging. Back in the sixth, reached on an error. 0-3 on the night. 0-2 count. High chopper up the middle, could be two, but not fielded by the second baseman. It bounces off his glove. And now the bases are loaded for the Rafters on another error. That going to be a likely error for the Dock Spiders defense. Waiting for the official call there, but regardless, the bases are now loaded. Officially, it is going to go in as a single. Was going to be a tough play from second base, but Lachlan Maud over to first base. Peyton Bryant is on second. Landon Gaz is on third. And the first pitch to Mike Monahan in there for strike number one. 0-1 the count. And Monahan, the right-handed hitting DH, wouldn't it be such a huge moment if he's able to get his hit here? Righty-lefty matchup between him and Ament. 0-1 count coming home is grounded foul down the third base line. Now an 0-2 count. Bases are loaded with one out in the bottom of the eighth inning. The Rafters trail it by six. Trying to get back on the right track here. Mike Monahan trying to turn it around. 0-2 the count, though. He's got to fight off here, and that pitch outside for ball number one. 1-2 the count. Monahan, all three of his hits came in that game at Lakeshore on August 2nd. Does not have a hit at home yet. Trying to be the hero here and start cutting into this lead. It's a 10-4 lead. The Rafters haven't scored in the eighth. 1-2 count outside for ball two. Now 2-2 the count. And a walk is perfect for the Rafters here. They don't need a hit. Obviously, that would be great for Monahan, but all you need is a base runner. 2-2 the count. Pitch coming home. Misses high and outside. Ball three. It's a full count to Mike Monahan. Maud is on first. Bryant's on second. Gaz is on third. One out in the bottom of the eighth. Six-run game, but the Rafters offense trying to get heated against Ryan Ament. He fires home. It's hit up the middle over towards second, and a tough one. 4-6-3 double play ends the inning, and not able to work out of that one. It was well struck, but on the ground, and that finishes the inning here as Maud is out at second and Monahan is out at first. The Rafters score no runs despite the two hits. There were no errors, and there was two left on base. We go to the ninth, the final inning here at Winterfield of the season, potentially. The Rafters will look to extend it, but it is 10-4 Dock Spiders and going to be tough to come back here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
You may have heard of the 4% rule when it comes to retirement. After you retire, you withdraw 4% of your retirement savings each year. The truth is, the 4% rule should be viewed as a guide, not as a strict rule. For example, the rule is based on retiring at age 65. If you retire earlier, you may want a lower withdrawal rate. Your lifestyle also matters. Are you planning to travel the world or spend more time at home? Consider inflation as well. A well-built strategy usually includes small annual increases in withdrawals. But you don't need to take a raise just because the calendar says so. So, stay flexible and revisit your plan of withdrawals regularly. That will give you the best shot at a secure, fulfilling retirement.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Kanoki, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
Let's get back to Rafters baseball here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
It was a threat for the Rafters to score in the bottom of the eighth, but they left them loaded. Well, would have if not for the double play that ended the inning. And so the Rafters held scoreless there. It remains a 10-4 lead for the Fond du Lac Dock Spiders as we hit the top of the ninth inning in the regular season home finale here at Winterfield for the Rafters. The last home game of the year, and hoping for it to be a big comeback, but the first pitch of the ninth inning in there for strike number one. This is a tough part of the order between Dawson Schmidt and Camden Kunkey. Even though they're the 7 and 8 batters in the batting order, they have been lighting it up today. Swing and a miss brings strike number two up for Schmidt. Schmidt, the right-handed hitting second baseman. It's a righty-righty matchup between him and Jack Wiesinger. Wiesinger went 3-up, 3-down in the eighth inning, had 2 strikeouts, strike away from his third of the game. 0-2 count coming home. It's a fly ball out towards right field on a half swing there and caught by Kobayashi for out number one, and that's 1-up, 1-down in the ninth. Brings up Camden Kunkey with the bases empty and 1 out in the top of the ninth. Still a 6-run lead for the Dockspiders, and Kunkey, the right-handed hitting left fielder, is 3-for-4 on the game. Schmidt hadn't been retired up until that point. Schmidt was 2-for-2 with 2 walks and 2 singles. Kunkey, 3-for-4 with a double and 2 singles. First pitch misses for ball number one inside and chases Kunkey out of the batter's box. So now a 1-0 count, and Kunkey, the right-handed hitting left fielder, righty-righty matchup between him and Wiesinger. 1-0 count coming home, misses high, now 2-0. And Kunkey aim. The Dockspiders are in a swing and a miss, bring strike number one to Kunkey. On deck, it's Jalen Gellings. He's due up in the top of the ninth. The Rafters up next will head to Fond du Lac before 2 games at Wausau. 2-1 the count, swing and a miss for strike number two. Good stuff from Wiesinger. That last pitch, 90 miles an hour on the gun. 2-2 the count. Trying to take care of one of the hottest hitters on the Dockspiders. 2-2 the count coming home. Misses high, now 3-2. And Kunkey coming in with now a 3-2 count. 1 out and the base is empty. Still a 6-run game, and Wiesinger looking home. Fires and gets a late swing, but a foul back as it goes into the netting, and still a 3-2 count. Jalen Gellings is 0-for-4, and he's on deck, and really love to end the inning with him, but got to take care of Kunkey first. Make sure to locate here on a 3-2 count. Wiesinger brings the leg up, fires home, and gets him jammed on the hands, but it's going to bloop out towards right field and land in front of Kobayashi for a 1-out single. His 4th hit of the game, and it brings in Jalen Gellings to the batter's box with a man on first and 1 out in the top of the ninth. Still 10-4, the lead for the Dockspiders. And Gellings, the right-handed hitting third baseman, it's a righty-righty matchup between him and Wiesinger. Wiesinger looks back to first base where Kunkey stands. Kunkey, no stolen bases on the game despite his 4 hits. First pitch to Gellings in there on the inside half of the plate for strike number one. 0-1 the count, and Gellings, 0-for-4 his last time up, popped out to first base. He did ground into a double play in the fifth. Runner taking off from first here, though. Throw on down to second. It is not in time. Slid in there safe as it's now a 1-1 count. And the first stolen base of the game for Camden Kunkey. And it brings up a 1-1 count with a man on second and 1 away in the top of the ninth for Jalen Gellings. Still 6-run game. Wiesinger looking to keep it as such. Looks back to second, now fires home. This one's laced out towards straightaway center field on the run back. It is caught by Lindsay. Now tries to throw it to third, and it's a good one, but not quite in time as the runner does advance on a productive flyout. So Kunkey now on third base, but 2 outs in the top of the ninth, and a 10-4 lead for the Dockspiders. Tommy Guggins will step into the batter's box, looking to drive in some more runs. Guggins, 2-for-4 in the game. He scored 3 runs and has 2 RBIs, 3 stolen bases tonight. And the first pitch on the way home in there for strike number one. 0-1 the count. Guggins has stolen 9 bases against the Rafters this season. He'll have another chance tomorrow to seal that 10th bag. 0-1 the count. Pitch coming home. It is on the inside edge, called for strike number two. 0-2 the count. Guggins Had that two RBI single his last time up and eventually came around to score, but he grounded out in the sixth and he flew out in the fourth. 0-2 count coming home. Misses outside for ball number one, a 1-2 count. Before that, though, he drew his walk and singled in the first two innings. Wiesinger looking for strikeout number three on the game. 1-2 the count. He came in back in the eighth inning. Threw a shutout frame there. Trying to throw a shutout ninth. 1-2. 4 seconds on the pitch clock. Brings it home with 1 second, but it misses high for ball number two. Now a 2-2 count. Reese McCarthy is on deck, and he's reached four times. Twice has been on an error. So he's batting just 1-for-4 from the plate. 2-2 count to Googins. This one's laced down the left field line into the corner. Will it stay fair or foul? It will bounce just foul. Nearly a double, maybe even triple for Googins, but instead he'll have to head back to the batter's box from second base where he was at. He had made it all the way to second by the time it landed foul. Googins was ready to go there and just not quite able to get that one to land, and so Googins now back into the batter's box, and guy who comes from Princeton University, 28 RBIs entering this game. He's now up to 30 after his 2 RBI single, trying to add to that number. And Googins now ready to roll. Wiesinger hoping to finish off the inning. 2-2 count. Fouled back once again. Barely able to make contact with that one, and it remains a 2-2 count, but the seventh pitch of the plate appearance coming up here. Wiesinger rubbing his hands and now puts the glove back on, and Tommy Googins stepping into the batter's box. 10-4 ball game still in the top of the ninth. Two outs, runner on third base. Pitch from Wiesinger is high for ball number three. Now a 3-2 count. And Jack Wiesinger trying to finish off the inning, but Tommy Googins is not an easy man to retire. Full count with the man on third and two away. Wiesinger gets the swing and a miss for strike number three, and that takes care of Tommy Googins for the third out of the ninth inning. No runs on the one hit. There were no errors, and there was one left on base. The Rafters' last chance at home comes up next when we return here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Let's get back to the game here on WFHR.
It's one last inning at home for the Rafters this season, and hoping for it to be a good one. They trail by 6 in the bottom of the ninth, and they are going to be seeing their 9-1-2 batters due up in the order, taking on Ryan Ament. The Dock Spiders looking to use just two pitchers in the game as Noah Chubb went six innings pitched and did not allow an earned run, although he allowed four unearned runs. Ryan Ament has thrown two shutout innings so far as the first pitch to Christian Bermudez gets a swing and a miss for strike number one. 0-1 the count. Bermudez will be followed by River Lindsay and Hiroto Kobayashi in the bottom of the ninth. 10-4, the Dock Spiders lead. 0-1 the count. It jams the hands of Bermudez and gets fouled back. Now an 0-2 count. Bermudez 1-for-3 on the game. He singled his last time up. Before that, it was a strikeout and a groundout. 0-2 coming home, and Ryan Ament trying to go three complete innings to finish it. And that called for strike number three takes care of Christian Bermudez for out number one. Brings up River Lindsay to the plate with one out and the bases empty in the bottom of the ninth. River Lindsay, a left-handed stick, the center fielder from Rock Valley College. Comes up looking for his first hit of the game. So far 0-for-3. He's reached on an error and a hit-by-pitch. First one from Ament, swing and a miss for strike number one. 0-1 the count. River Lindsay had entered this game batting .429. He'd played just two games, but had been very strong in those two. 0-1 count coming home. This one inside and hits Lindsay. Second hit by pitch of the game, and that breaks up the potential immaculate inning as Lindsay heads over to first on the HBP. Brings up Hiroto Kobayashi with a man on first and one away in the bottom of the ninth. 10-4 the Dock Spiders lead here in Wisconsin Rapids. And that moon bright above the sky, although a couple of thin clouds blocking it. The first pitch to Kobayashi misses inside for ball number one. 1-0 the count. Kobayashi, right-handed hitting right fielder. Righty-lefty matchup between him and Ryan Ament. The man on first is River Lindsay. And the pitch from Ament. Misses inside for ball two. Now a 2-0 count. Kobayashi 0-for-3 on the game. He did draw a walk back in the fourth inning, however. His last time up was a fly out to center field. 2-0 count. Laced down the third baseline, and it stays fair. Here comes Lindsay for second. Kobayashi is heading to second. Lindsay will stay at third. And it's a double for Hiroto Kobayashi. Able to make the fans happy here in the ninth inning. The Rafters have quite a lot of work to do if they want to make a comeback here. But you got to get base runners if you want to do so. And it brings up Kareem Arusevic to the plate with runners on second and third and one out in the bottom of the ninth. A 10-4 lead for the Dock Spiders. And the Rafters, the numbers don't go their way this season. But we'll see if they care about that as Arusevic lines one over to first, and that one stays fair. Here goes Arusevic to second as one run will score, and a second will score as well. A 2-RBI double from Kareem Arusevic. It's back-to-back extra base hits for the Rafters, and all of a sudden a four-run game in the ninth inning. Clears the bases on that double. Kobayashi scores from second base, and River Lindsay scores from third. So now a runner in scoring position with one out in the bottom of the 9-6 ball game. The fans still pack the stands here in Wisconsin Rapids. And getting loud here in the regular season home finale. The home crowd, a 2,250 attendance. Absolutely packing the stands here in Wisconsin Rapids. The highest attendance this year by a long shot, and the fans are certainly getting loud late in the game, hoping to have an impact, and it brings up Landon Gaz, who is not a fun sight to see for Ryan Ament. Righty-lefty matchup, and the first pitch to Gaz, a breaking ball that misses low for ball number one. 1-0 the count. Arusevic is on second. He had his second hit of the game there on the 2-RBI double. Gaz, 1-for-2. He has a walk, a hit-by-pitch, and an RBI double himself. Back in the fourth inning. 1-0 the count. Ament getting the call from his catcher, Quinn Chambeau. Now ready to fire. He brings the pitch and gets it fouled back into the netting. 1-1 the count. Jake Beauchesne is on deck. And Peyton Bryant in the hole represents the tying run for the Rafters. 1-1 the count. Runner still on second base. Arusevic gets a long look his way. 1-1 count, misses outside. Now 2-1 the count. And Gaz, he has scored one run, has one RBI. Reached base three times, trying to reach for a fourth. You just got to get runners aboard. 2-1 count now. It's hit to the right side of the infield. Should be an easy play for the second baseman. Picks it up and throws to first. And the Rafters now down to their final out of the game. A 4-3 putout takes care of Landon Gaz, and Kareem Arusevic does advance to third. But it brings up Jake Beauchesne with a runner 90 feet away and two outs in the bottom of the ninth. A four-run deficit. Beauchesne, the right-handed hitting left fielder. It's a righty-lefty matchup between him and Ament. Ament looking for the three-inning save. Pitch coming home, misses low for ball number one, a 1-0 count. The Dock Spiders have led throughout the entire game, but the Rafters had kept it close up until that four-run seventh inning. 1-0 count, hit to the right side of the infield, up to the second baseman, doesn't cleanly field it, but grabs it up and throws it to first, and that does it for the final home game of the season. The Rafters, unfortunately, can't get the win. The final score, 10-6. In that ninth inning, the Rafters scored two runs on two hits. There were no errors, and there was one left on base. And the Rafters not having the finale at home that they were hoping for, but what a season for the Rafters, and not one that they had hoped would go the way that it did, but nonetheless, there were memories made and development from everyone out here, and such an important summer regardless of the win-loss record, and hopefully you guys did enjoy as well, but still have plenty left to go as we will talk everything over in the post-game show. That comes up next. This is Rafters Baseball on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
It's an emotional time here for so many Rafters as they stand on the third baseline and wave off the fans for one final time this season as fireworks already going off here. There is going to be a long fireworks show when this is over, but what a year here at Witter Field, and the Rafters unfortunately not able to end it on a high note, but let's take a look back at how it all happened. First inning comes around and Kenny Schultz, well, not able to lock it down. He was taken out of the game after throwing 36 pitches in the first inning. He allowed three runs to come across, and that put the Dock Spiders up. Ashton Poole took over, and in the second inning, he allowed one run to make it 4-0, but then he locked it down. The Rafters were able to score two in the bottom of the fourth inning to cut the deficit to 4-2, and those two runs came across in an RBI double from Landon Gaz and an RBI sac fly from Jake Beauchesne. Then, in the top of the fifth, that did not stay for long because two more runs came across for the Dock Spiders. They extended the lead back up to four. It was 6-2 after that top half of the frame. An RBI single from Camden Kunkey, and along with that, a RBI single an RBI sack fly from Jonathan Fitz. So that made it 6-4 as Ashton Poole went four innings and allowed the three runs to come across to score. So not too bad from him, and two of those runs came across in that fifth inning. Then in the top of the bottom of the sixth inning, the Rafters would score again. They scored two runs on the Lachlan Maud error that allowed two runs to come across. Lachlan Maud reached on an error, and two more runs came across. That made it 6-4, so the Rafters had it back to a two-run game. But then the seventh inning comes around, and four runs come across for the Dock Spiders. RBI double from Camden Kunkey, two RBI double from Tommy Guggins, and that was part of the reason why the inning would end up being a big-time inning for the Dock Spiders. Also, RBI single from Reese McCarthy, and so that made it a then 10-4 ball game. The Rafters would be held scoreless until the ninth, when they snuck across two more runs on the two RBI double from Kareem Marusevic, but that would be the final score, 10-6 here from Witterfield. Looking back at the numbers from tonight's game, the Rafters had some good offense from Kareem Marusevic, 2-for-5 with two RBIs. Also struck out twice along with that. Kobayashi, 1-for-4 with a walk and a double, and two RBIs from Lachlan Maud as he went 1-for-4 on the game. On the pitching side, Kenny Schultz didn't have the game that he was hoping for, allowed two earned runs on one inning pitched, three runs in total. Ashton Poole allowed three runs, all three were earned in four innings. A.J. Buonasetta struggled, allowing four runs in two innings, but Jack Wiesinger closed it down with two scoreless innings and had three strikeouts, allowing just one hit and no walks. But the final score, 10-6. And taking a look ahead to next game, the Rafters going to be heading on the road for three final games of the season. The first one tomorrow in Fond du Lac. That matchup against the Dock Spiders, with the righty Justin Battle taking the mound for Wisconsin Rapids. He had a quality start his last time out, looking to continue and see if he can get his second of the 3.8 ERA, and will be taking the mound at 6:35 p.m. for first pitch. Well, the pregame show will come to your way at 6:20 tomorrow from Fond du Lac, but that just about does it for our broadcast tonight. So, the Rafters unable to get the win, but throughout the season there are so many thank yous to give out, and I don't know where to start. I do the thank yous every single night here, and for those of you who stay to the end, you probably know that, but not many of you likely do. But man, throughout the season there have been so many great people that I've got to work with, and here at Witterfield for one final time, certainly an emotional end to this regular season. 36 games here at Witterfield in Wisconsin Rapids. It has been magical, and a big shout out to all of you fans for helping make it as such. Also a shout out to all of the players throughout the season, first half, second half, and later second half players as well, as they helped make this such a great experience. And also, one final time, to the coaching staff and to WFHR for being huge supporters of Rafters baseball here on the radio side. Also, a shout out to all of my coworkers who are having their final baseball game of the season here. And I know that they all put in so much work throughout the year. And of course, to our front office members, Jake Adams, Gwen Filippi, Connor Filippi, and along with that, Ken Day, our general manager, for giving me the opportunity to broadcast these games and for always helping out throughout the entire season. But that's going to do it for myself here from Wisconsin Rapids. So one final time, the Rafters, 6 runs, the Dock Spiders 10. For myself, Austin Thomas, and from the rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, thank you, and have a phenomenal rest of your night.
It's to organizing and having, you know, a labor management relationship has been detrimental, especially within the walls of the VA. And a lot of the employees are not really seeing it, because they're coming to work, they're doing their job, and they're going home. They don't really pay attention to most of the stuff that the politics are, that's happening right now coming out of DC. And, you know, we share emails, we share things on our Facebook group page. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of flack back from some employees, and we've lost a few members. But most of these people are coming around now and thinking, you know, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I cast my vote for. Why are they doing this? And my response is, I've been talking about this for over a year. You know, we tried. Yeah. We tried to warn you.
No. Like I said, the same thing here. When they go, can you believe he did this? You go, yeah. I told you he was going to do it. We talked about this for quite some time. So, you know, when we hear these stories that, you know, because Trump now with the Ninth Circuit decision can basically hire, fire anybody he wants because, well, we're giving deference to him on national security grounds, although I'm not quite sure how a VA hospital, you know, in Pennsylvania or in Virginia or anywhere falls under our national security, you know, platform. He's going to be able to do this. So the stories of cutting between 30 and 83,000 VA jobs, that's got to be something that your members are affected by, considering the people that I talk to, you're already overworked and underpaid.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. So I became the president of this local in February of 2024. We had fantastic, you know, employees. We were a very efficient local facility. And in shortly after February of 2024, the federal government announced issues and they had to cut back on employees because of these budget issues. Like, we were millions of dollars over the budget because we had too many staff. So I can tell you specific numbers at the Altoona VA from February of 2024 to December of 2024, they cut 170 positions throughout the facility by using attrition. So people left, you know, or they retired, they used that and then they just didn't backfill those positions. So going into the Trump administration, we were already seeing the effects of losing staff. So they piggyback all this workload and they say, okay, well now Susie, you're gonna go and do Jane's job because Jane left. So, okay, there's one, but now you have the Trump administration who comes in and they offer the DRP program, the designated resignation program. They offered out early retirements. And I mean, we lost, I think in Altoona, I'm pretty sure the number, and I don't know if it's 100% accurate, but 50 plus more employees. So we're up over 200 and now they're talking about, well, they're going to reorganize. How many more people are you going to cut? Like, we have, specifically, we're down 8 providers.
Wow.
These providers are direct patient care. How do you expect, being short that many providers, to handle a panel of patients that is anywhere from 750 to 1,300 veterans on a panel? And, you know, I keep saying our veterans need to be more involved, but the staff that do work in our facility are genuinely there to serve the veterans. And that's all we hear. I'm here because I love to help my veterans and I want to be able to support my veterans. But at what point do you throw the flag in the air and say that the agency, federal government, is taking advantage of your moral compass? Because they will not offer overtime. They will not offer comp time unless you physically are sitting with a patient. So that could be, but however, patients are scheduled through the main operational hours, 8 to 4:30. But there's all kinds of things that's done in the health field behind the scenes. Like, you're not sitting in your doctor's chair. So take, for instance, you go to a doctor's appointment. You have your 15, 20-minute appointment with your provider. Then you leave. They order tests. They send out, you know, records, or they order your care. They review things, order prescriptions. That's not being classified as direct patient care. So you can't get overtime. You can't get comp time to stay late and make sure that all those T's have been crossed for that direct patient care that is needed. And it's frustrating to these providers. We're going to lose more. And matter of fact, a week ago today, we were in an open forum meeting with our medical center director. And I did type in the chat, at what point is leadership concerned with losing good employees?
It's an honest question.
Who are here for the great of the good? His response was, work in itself is an inconvenience. Like, I'm sorry, what? Like, you have people that are leaving.
What does that mean? Work in itself, what does that mean?
I mean, here's the thing. The question that I posed was, if you have people doing 1, 2, and 3 people's jobs, at what point does leadership get concerned that you're going to lose good staff? And he said, work in itself is an inconvenience. If people aren't happy here, they can go and seek happiness wherever they deem to feel fit. But we have to run by the agency mission, which we're doing it. He's getting praise because Altoona has great staff, great employees. But at what cost?
Right.
I mean, so burnout is a thing.
Because you said a moment ago that, you know, you think they're taking advantage of the goodwill and the, you know, the commitment to our veterans, which I don't doubt. But I also have to wonder if this is just all part of the grand scheme in making the place so intolerable that good people do leave and it does fold so that they can privatize and profitize it and ultimately go to what their bottom line is government can't or shouldn't do anything. So I'm curious, how much do you see of that?
I mean, a lot. I personally do think that's what they're doing. I do believe that they're making it such a miserable place to be that they want to snuff out a lot of people so that they can privatize and do away with the personalization of the care that the veterans give. And listen, I'm an employee there too. I have a job other than being the local president, and I am the same type of employee. I stay, I make sure I do right by my veterans because I value the services that I provide to veterans. And that's all the staff that are at the Altoona VA. They all value what they're doing.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I may sit there and stay 20 minutes late because I want to make sure that I have finished that out because I have, you know, OCD that I don't want to let it go to the next day. There's a lot of people that are like that, but they have mechanisms in place that they can track all of this. And, you know, you said about the privatization, like, people don't think that can happen, but it absolutely can. Like, we are a small community. They could funnel all of the veterans that are served here in Blair County to a bigger, larger VA and do away with it. And I've been talking about this. We talk about it every month in our monthly meetings. We have, you know, our membership, you know, they ask a lot of questions. A lot of people were very afraid of the probationary employees. I mean, we had 3 probationary employees that were let go, and then they brought them back because the court order overturned that. But now, with the strengthening of this, you know, Schedule F, and all, they're increasing the year. They are adding a year to a probationary period. So there are staff that are going to be affected by that. If you're in your probationary period, you have very limited rights. Again, not what people voted for. Why are we doing this? My biggest thing is they have turned it into an extremely toxic work environment, hostile, if you will, because they don't want you talking to your coworkers. They don't want you to know what's happening with anybody else. They want you to come in, focus on what work they need you to do, and you shouldn't be complaining about it. You have a job.
Yeah. Well, what do you say to the argument on that front of that's work in America? That's virtually every job in this country where, you know, there's a threat of potential unionization of workers coming together and demanding better wages, hours, conditions, that kind of toxic, you know, keep your head down or you're going to be next kind of mentality. Because I've been arguing, you know, a lot of people said they want Trump to be president so he can run the country like a business. I argue he is. He's treating you guys like he treated his own workers, or a lot of employers treat their employees.
That infuriates me that the federal government employees are at the, you know, at the hand of the president of the United States. I will tell you, the first Trump administration, I was extremely, I was flabbergasted when he decided for a couple of months that he was going to not withhold our Social Security money out of our paychecks to give money more back to us. Like, $46 every 2 weeks is going to give me any more food on my table. No, stop messing with my taxes. Like, I don't understand that. Again, just to throw a little dig out there, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but obviously he's not showing his taxes, so it doesn't matter to him. But my taxes is extremely important to me. And so not only did he mess that up for the year that we were in, but it trickled into the next year because they double dipped and took all that Social Security payment out from January to May of the following year. So I was extremely hot about that.
Yeah, because like, ultimately you got to dig in your pocket come tax time to make up for the wonderful gift he gave you, which really was nothing more than a headache. But I want to go back to, you know, the treatment, because, you know, during the break, you shared a story about the director and how hostile Because as I understand, you guys have always had a good working relationship at that facility, and now you've got this hostility that's come in because of leadership. And I would argue this is, you know, the fish rots from the head down. This is coming right out of the Oval Office.
Oh, yes, it is. So I became the president in February 24, and in August of 2024, the medical center director just decided that he no longer wanted to use the annual union leave roster policy for the staff to select their annual weeks of leave. I filed a grievance. I filed an unfair labor practice. I even filed for a temporary restraining order against it through the FRLA. That was denied. I do have an appeal on the table, but that's probably going to sit there for another 4 years till we get to hear that. But 25 plus years of past practice, and the employees were extremely angry because he threw out there that you didn't have to use seniority. The supervisor could decide how they wanted to allow and approve the employee's leave roster or what their annual leave they would be taking. And I did a petition. I did everything to kind of point it out. And there was a meeting that was held. I was in the back of the room and I raised my hand and I asked a specific question. Like, it shouldn't be by my social security number, because he said you could use the last four of someone's social security number, their spot on the roster. My date of hire and my seniority should count. It has always counted. And I asked a question. His face became very red. He lashed back at me. And he said, this is not the time and or place. Well, I am an employee here too. And I'm just saying what everybody else is afraid to say, because in our facility, absolutely retaliation is a thing. If you step over the line, like, you can see it, you become the outcast, you become the scarlet lettered person, and then stuff just starts to trickle down, and then your supervisor starts digging into whether or not you did quality work. Like, you weren't worried about that 2 years ago, but because I voiced my opinion, now you are. That stuff is happening.
And this is, again, the reason why workers need a union, to protect them in those moments when retaliation does rear its head, and favoritism and harassment and all of the things that that workers across this country have to endure. But here, I guess the question I want to finish up with is, do your members feel the same way? Are they seeing the same kind of treatment? Because there's a moment here where if Trump gets his way, you will not have the protections of a union, of AFGE or any union, because, well, everyone's going to be almost at will. I guess at will is what the court has basically given Trump the ability to do.
So AFGE has a very, very good supporting structure, and I'm very grateful for my supporting structure through the national AFGE. We do have other tools that we can use. Doesn't necessarily mean if our collective bargaining agreement goes away, while it is very meaningful, and a lot of people do not, they don't know what that master agreement means to them. That is their Bible. I like to say that. That's my Bible. I have one in every realm, in hard copy. I have it in an electronic copy on every device that I have, because I might need to reference it. I don't know it by heart, but I absolutely am very familiar with referencing it. But the biggest thing that people don't really understand is, you take that collective bargaining agreement away, you have greater risk, and they could fire you just because you wore a blue shirt to work. And that's not a reason to fire or terminate somebody. They can pick on you and cause you mental anguish and distress and anxiety. Like, how do you don't want people like that working and giving care to a patient. Like, happy staff means happy services. That's what I say all the time. But, you know, we do have other tools that we have explored that we can use, congressional grievance forms and things like that. And I think that it's going to be a lot of work. But I hope that when and if the pendulum swings and Mr. Trump is no longer our president, I hope that it comes back around and we are able to regain the momentum again. But the staff at the Altoona VA, some of them have caught on, and we have had conversations, you know, and they said, you know, I made a mistake. I think a lot of Americans who put that little check mark in that box are realizing that they did make a mistake, because your eggs, your gas, and your groceries, that's not going anywhere. And if that's why you cast that vote, I think you should look into more bigger issues in this country.
But people's rights are going away now. And
they are.
The idea of
they
due
are.
Process is going away. The idea of contracts are going away. And again, nothing that that people say they didn't vote for. But again, you go back to the election cycle. I'm sure you were telling your members, as I was telling my audience, this stuff is coming. They've written it down. They're running on it. It's going to happen. So we can't. I have no sympathy for someone who goes, I'm surprised. I didn't vote for this. Yeah, you kind of did.
I mean, we pushed the Project 2025, the whole list. Like, it's a checklist for him. It's a checklist for this administration. Like, just pay attention. It's coming. And there are so many, like, we have 1/3 of our employees are veterans. And how do you, so you're getting it not only from the veteran standpoint in your care, but now you're getting it from the angle of your position, that you yeah. have your job that feeds your family, takes care of your livelihood. So you're getting screwed twice. No, like, stop.
Not good. Jennifer Salt, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great work. Keep up the fight. We will get through this.
Absolutely.
Might be some suffering, but we're going to get through it. Jennifer, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Are you experiencing any of this stuff, maybe in the workplace by you? Or is it, as I've had people tell me, well, it's about time that those federal workers understand what it's like to work in America. And, you know, maybe, I don't know. Maybe this is where we got to go. As I've been saying, the solution's going to come out of the suffering. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1835. That was the day that began the Baltimore Bank Riot. The Bank of Maryland had failed in 1834. Thousands of people who had deposited money in the bank saw their savings vanish. For nearly a year and a half, the depositors wanted their money to be returned. Anger grew. Some of that anger was directed at one of the bank's directors, Reverdy Johnson. The bank directors were accused of fraud and speculation that had caused the bank's failure. The bank officials were also dragging their feet on settling accounts with bank clients, because the directors wanted to keep their personal fortune. A crowd gathered around Director Johnson's house and broke out some windows. The mayor of Baltimore ordered a troop of 30 armed guards to protect Johnson's residence. The next day, the angry mob turned their attention to another director, John Glenn. They began to demolish his home before the mounted guards stopped the damage. 2 days later, the mob returned to Director Johnson's home. This time, they were able to overpower the guards. They piled up Johnson's property in the street and set it on fire. The crowd swelled and moved on to destroy property of other bank directors. Revolutionary War veteran Sam Smith organized a militia of 3,000 men to stop the destruction. The leaders of the bank protest were arrested and jailed. The bank directors received $100,000 from the state as compensation for the destruction of their property. The bankers were not held responsible for their actions, which caused the bank to fail. Does this sound familiar? Most of the bankers who caused the 2008 crash also never faced consequences.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So welcome back to the future, because we're living through it right now. We are living through the back to the future moment here in this country, where, look, collective bargaining rights, union rights, basic worker protections. You know, the thing that once built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity, got it. Done. That's going to be the Trump legacy. Reagan's legacy was the shot heard across the boardroom. It was open season on unions during the Reagan years. Now, well, it's that on steroids. And look, this isn't some warning from a distant past. We are speeding back. We're speeding back to the future, as I said. Right now, you're seeing a wave of anti-union laws being proposed and moved, executive orders that are terrible, corporate lawsuits and attacks that, look, it's going to plunge us back into the era, as I've been saying for a while, company towns, company script, voiceless, powerless, at-will employment, desperation. Are you surprised? The answer should be no. Every executive order that Trump moves forward on is an attack on workers' rights. But Rick, he cares. No. And I know, it's just those federal workers. You know, I've had a number of conservatives over the years tell me, you know, we don't have a problem with unions, it's just those government unions. And you go, they're workers, like everyone else. So if you're willing to set your public sector workers out on an island and allow them to be attacked, as Trump and the Republicans are doing, as Republicans have been doing for decades, well, you're willing to attack all workers. That Trump executive order targets over two-thirds of the federal workforce. And as I've been saying, you know, the weird thing is how is the guy who empties the garbage can, how is that a national security job? And by ending their ability to have collective bargaining rights, they have no representation. There's no grievance procedure. There's no due process. There is patronage. There is dear leader. Do what dear leader says, or your life will be turned upside down. And I fully expect them to do as Reagan did when he fired the Patco workers and blacklist them from ever working for the federal government again. Because that's what they do. And the weird thing is, you know, my mind goes, well, what happens when collective bargaining goes away? You're going to be in all this horrible situation. The sad reality is for far too many workers in this country, that's already the reality. At will, poverty wage, desperate working condition jobs is what's out there for many, many working class folks. And this, again, for me, a failure of the Democrats to be the ones to stand up and fight for those people. Even if you lose, you stand up and you fight. But understand, we're heading back, like I said, to the future of yellow dog contracts, where if you have the audacity to say that you'll ever vote for a union, you don't get a job. We're heading back to a time where the company owned everything. And it's not that distant of a past. You know, right when I moved to Pennsylvania back in 93, I met a guy, older guy. He said when he came back from Vietnam, they gave him a little bit of money, and he went back to, you know, coal country up in Nanticoke, I believe it was, in Pennsylvania, where they used to mine coal. And he said, look, I paid the company store off with that little bit of money. And he said the first time in his family's lineage and in his time, their time in this country, that they weren't in debt to the company store. And that story has stuck with me all these years because we seem to be heading back in that direction. We seem to be heading back in a direction of Musk getting a company town in Texas, having the ability to do anything he wants. We're moving towards all of this digital currency and willingly going, oh, it's just more convenient. Yeah, it's just more convenient. Question is, folks, once we get there, will we, I guess like the frog in the pot, will we know? And if we do figure it out, is there a way out? Or will we continue to eat each other while we're in the pot? It's amazing to me every day when I talk to workers, oh, those government workers, don't care about them. Without understanding, we're all in the same pot. We all go to work and punch a clock and all have to support our families. Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Problems at United Airlines, where delays are in the hundreds due to what CBS's Chris Van Cleef says appears to have been an issue with the system that calculates weight and balance, which is necessary before a plane can depart.
This has been going on for several hours. It began this evening. The FAA confirms that the airline asked for ground stops at most of its major hubs, including Newark, Denver, Houston, Chicago, and San Francisco.
Some United mainline flights are beginning to take off, but it's expected that the delays will take the rest of the night to resolve. The Fort Stewart base in Georgia was put on lockdown earlier today when authorities say an Army sergeant pulled out a personal handgun and shot five fellow soldiers. The suspect is in custody, no motive revealed. CBS's Skylar Henry is at Fort Stewart.
The suspected gunman, 28-year-old Cornelius Radford, opened fire here on base. Essentially a workplace shooting, for lack of